September 6th meeting of the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee to order. I'd like to begin by entertaining a motion to approve the August 1st meeting minutes.
I'll make that motion.
And a second?
Second.
Second from Corcoran. And any discussion on the August 1st minutes? Legislator Erner?
Just a couple of typos. Under Resolution 425, to Motion 13, it says move to postpone 423. And then, should I wait for a moment, Clerk Mahler?
I got it.
Okay. And then on Resolutions 126 and 127, they have the same title as 425. So I move that we correct those titles and resolution.
Oh, I gotcha.
Great. Well, so there's a motion on the table to correct those titles and typo.
Just amend the motion to make the motion to accept the minutes as corrected.
Yeah. Do we need a separate motion, or can we just accept them?
He can change his second, and then we can vote. Oh, sorry, you were asking someone else.
Well, they hadn't been I'll on the procedural thing.
That's your motion.
Well, it's right now it's Phil's motion that's waiting a second. Well, there's a motion to approve, and there's a motion to amend.
So what I'm saying is if my honorable colleague will withdraw his motion, that I will change my motion to be a motion to accept the corrected minutes rather than the minutes as submitted.
If that's fine with the clerk, then I'm fine with that.
Okay, and I'll withdraw that.
Okay, and then
Legislator Corcoran has to approve that as well as the second.
All right. So any further discussion on the minutes? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the August 1st minutes are approved unanimously. Before we get started with our resolutions, we've invited Joe Conker, the founder of O Positive, to join us. Those who have spent time in Kingston will probably recognize the murals. There's also a lot of health outcomes that they're driving towards. And so what I'd like to do is give him a few minutes to give a little bit of background and then share an update for some of the work that they're doing here that I think is very exciting, and then a few minutes for questions. But we're going to try and keep the whole thing to about 10 minutes. All right.
Thanks.
Mr. Conker, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I think I could do it in 3 minutes to keep you guys really on your agenda. I brought some stuff here, some mural maps and also announcements, because the festival is in 4 weeks as of today. So I'm really trying to move quickly. In 2010, I was at a party. I'm going to tell you the history of O Positive. And a person came to me and handed me a beer and said he wanted to bring a band. Now, if you all remember 2010, I went to high school here. I'm a Kingstonian. So in 2010, there wasn't a lot going on in town. And he wanted to bring a band to Kingston, and he said, I'll clean their teeth. And I literally said, what are you, a dentist? And he said, yes. So I went home that night, couldn't sleep, called the doctor, called some musicians. I'm a painter, called some painters. We all got together and said, what would happen if we actually exchanged for health care? What if we took money out of the system and actually said, we value each other equally as community members, and we value each other equally for what we can do? And that first year, we had about 25 providers, I think 20 bands, maybe 6 or 7 artists. I mean, it was small. And as of this year, going into year 13, in the Old Dutch Church, we do a pop-up clinic every year, and we've done over 6,000 visits. That's primary care, dental, vocal cord screenings, hearing, everything you can imagine, and 2,000 dental visits, and we just 2 Fridays ago opened up our year-round clinic across from Keegan and Paul Bikert's. Paul Bikert, Timely Science, bought that building, so we have a gallery space and a clinic there with one doctor. So we're literally going to start with, we can do 225 people over a weekend. So now we're hoping to double that with our year-round care, all based on how we can exchange for care and what we can give. And our vision, just so you all know, is how do we increase more doctors to do that? Because we've got doctors knocking on our door all the time to help us. But the question is, how can we, it's so funny because housing and health just go hand in hand so much, but like how can we provide that care in a way that keeps artists and musicians here, and then we can say, well, this works for them, right, for our population that we're used to working with. Could we then go to the nonprofit sector because they're so uninsured there? And then how do we go to the whole city of Kingston, right? How could we make this exchange that we've been doing, is it possible for it to happen for 25,000 people? And then you could just sort of vision out how that would happen. Our big challenges are always as a nonprofit funding. We have no lack of energy. And really just looking for ways to connect and grow this together. The only way we've been able to get here, I mean, we actually share the same building, you know, as an office. The only way we've been able to get here is by everybody saying, like, hey, I can do that. Like, I can help you with this. So I wanted you all to know what we're doing, that we've been here for 13 years, that we now have a doctor on staff. It's Dr. Lizette Edge. She works at the hospital in the ER, and she'll be working with us, and we'll start building the clinic from there. It's as small as this room, but we're starting somewhere. And we're building an exchange platform that everybody will be able to use on their phone. So you could literally say, I can do gardening, and we could say, great, what do you want? You could say, I want to take concert tickets, or I'll take a visit to a dentist. So that's our vision. It's really simple. And look, I did it in under 4 minutes.
For that one.
Yeah, so I know what it's like to sit in the room. And it's hot out. And I wore a jacket. And I wanted to impress you all, and I got here, and I'm like, hey, where is here? I had no idea. Wait, here we go. Woo! All right. Do you have any questions?
I have a comment.
Yes.
You are amazing. I think what you guys do are, it's amazing. You're everyday people doing amazing things, very thoughtful things. He went by my house the other night. He said, hey, Nina. And look at the thoughtfulness that you
have. Well, you've been helping for a long time. Thank you. Yeah. Get all my brush. Yes.
How many doctors do you have participating in your program currently?
Great question. So this year we will have between 135 and 150 doctors and providers. So that's everything from medical doctors. We have like 7 residents from IFH, 9 residents from Nuvance. So that's a good thing for you all to know. Like, you all know residents have to like go through programs and have to do community work, but they love working with us. So like Nuvance has a new space out near the hospital, and like we have 9 residents that would love to rotate through your clinic all year long. So it's like, how do we build that pathway? And that's the big question. We have 3 dentists right now. We have plans for a mobile dental to just sort of go out into Midtown and take care of teeth. So we have a ton of stuff on the table.
Yes, and I was going to say, please be in touch with me too, because you really need to hit up my husband's office. He's a physician here in Kingston. And medical assistant in Hudson Valley, and he has participated in your events in the past, and that would be a great thing to involve their practice.
That would be great. Yeah, the more we can. I mean, we even have, just so you know, like Northwell Health in Manhattan, they come up with scopes from Olympus, and they do vocal cord screenings for every musician that needs it. Like, we're getting really detailed now. We started with, like, we know that 80% of all health determinants are primary care. We all know that in this room, like that's the key to get people into primary care. It's one reason we've been working with IFH to get the clinic on Pine Street done. Like, we want to make sure everybody gets to see a doctor, regardless of cost. After that, it's what do you need? What are your specific concerns? In our population, it's repetitive injury, it's massage, it's vocal cords, it's hearing. For all of our artists, I just completed a mural on Wall and Pearl, so if you all leave tonight, I finally did one. They finally convinced me to apply, and I did, one. I was very scared. I was 40 feet in the air. But for me, it's vision, right? I'm a painter. I want to make sure I can see for the rest of my life. So there's certain concerns there. And on the housing front, I will just say, we had a lot of artists and musicians move here. We've had a lot of artists and musicians move away due to the cost of their studios and stuff. So I will just throw that out there, the housing part of the evening too. So alleviating their healthcare costs, at least a little bit, even if it's mental health, which is maybe our second greatest request, even if that would be like a mental health visit would cost you $125 a month or $150 a month, if we could alleviate that by doing an exchange and have that happen year-round, that's $1,200, $1,500 a month, a year. That might be helpful to someone's studio rent. Yeah. So it's chipping away at the stresses is really, really important for us.
Well, I know that Joe and his organization were honored by the Health Alliance recently, and that was certainly well-deserved. And I know that you've done amazing work, as you said, with the dental community, too. And Tom Single, oh my gosh, what a great guy.
He was the dentist.
I'm feeling that. Yeah. He's the dentist. Yeah. He's awesome. Yeah. So just kudos to you for all the work that you've been doing. I think it's great.
And
so,
feel free to reach out to us with any, like, if you have any questions or any ideas, please feel free. Also, just so you know, on county property, because this is really exciting, we're doing a massive mural on the old Wonderly's building starting this weekend.
Wow.
On the trail. And we just got the permits through this morning. So I'll keep your eyes out for that for this year.
Excellent.
Did you have a question?
Oh, I did. I was waiting to be recognized.
Sure.
I don't know if I have to.
How do you keep the Sisyphean boulder from rolling over you as far as insurance issues mm-hmm. for the clients that you're mm-hmm. servicing? I know that there's requirement for insurance, and so I'm concerned for them.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good question. First of all, our provider's insurance carries wherever they go, right? So in our pop-up clinic, it's not a problem. But they will need malpractice and insurance to be in our permanent clinic, so there's costs there. But for the
clients, though.
For the clients, yeah. Most of our folks are uninsured.
And is there not a government requirement that they're penalized?
No. There's so much confusion around the Affordable Care Act and that loophole. But I would say this: that if you come in, so I had a musician write to me today. They have a serious health need. They texted me about an hour ago, right? They're not insured. So what I said to them. What I texted them back was, go to the Institute for Family Health. They have a navigator there to help you with insurance. That person will probably qualify for Medicaid, and they can see a primary care physician at the Institute for Family Health. It may take a little while. Everybody's understaffed, but it's available. And 9 times out of 10, I'm sure this committee sees it, it's mostly about education. There are really good safety nets out there if you know where to look. The question is, how do you get that warm handoff from our organization to a doctor? So we're really about connecting people in a lot of ways.
Great. Thank you.
I don't
want to
keep
much.
Your agenda.
No, we really appreciate it. Anyone has further questions, we can share Joe's contact information. He's pretty easy to find, though.
Super easy to find.
And we really appreciate you being here.
Thank you
so much.
I really appreciate it.
And
remember,
just
1 month from now.
1 month. And just carry your jacket today.
I really wore this because I wanted you guys to think I was really professional.
We got that.
All right, yes. Cool. See you all
Thank
later.
You, Jeff. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. So with that, we are going to go into our resolutions. We do have one department head that needs to leave a little early, so we're going to take their resolution first. That's there's two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Resolution 489, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $77,015.34, engineered by the county with family of Woodstock.
I'll move it.
Youth Bureau. That's a motion from Nolan. Can I have a second?
I'll second.
Second from Stuart. Director Dawson, do you want to give us a very, very brief background?
That would be for Family Health in 2022. The state is on one fiscal year, and the county's on another, and quite often we get our responses on what we're actually going to be giving for funding late in the year, so we tend to go over our calendar year. And I think the county allowed it up to March 31st, but we were transitioning, and I'll just leave it at that, from one financial to another financial. So it kind of, it happened. Thanks to you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? All right, I'll call the question. All those in favor of Resolution 489?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 490, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $36,508.71, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county, family of Woodstock, with the Youth Bureau. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Moved by Nolan, second by Petit. Director Dawson, do you want to give us a little bit of background on this?
Sure. This one is transitional living, and it works exactly the same way. Same situation.
Great. Thank you so much. Any questions from the committee? All right, I'll call the question on 490. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 490 is approved. And I believe those are the only for the Youth Bureau, and we really appreciate you being here, Nina. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and we're going to go back to the top here. This is Resolution 468, amending the 2023 to 2028 Capital Improvement Program, amending Capital Project 645, renovation of 21 Elizabeth Street, Elizabeth Manor Emergency Housing. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it. Second.
Moved by Stuart, second by Nolan. And let's see, this is John Gavaris's, right?
Yeah.
I know we have Kevin Roberts here for the next one.
Correct.
And I believe where we had left things on this was to hear any updates from the county executive's office on where we're at with Elizabeth Manor and emergency housing.
Sure. So we've been trying to get some guidance from the Treasury on the property. What we're exploring, and I think this was something that Legislator Petit had suggested at one point, but we would like to explore whether any nonprofits might be interested in taking on the property and turning it into housing of some sort, whether it's emergency housing, affordable housing, transitional, supportive. Emergency would be what we currently envision it, so that would be the ideal. But perhaps there is a way that a nonprofit would be able to do it at a faster pace, at a lower cost. So we are exploring that option, but we had to get some guidance from the Treasury because it was bought with ARPA funding, so we can't decide to do it unilaterally. They have to let us know if that's possible, and then specifically they have to approve it before we transfer the property in any way. So we've been kind of chasing them down, hoping to get an answer soon. At the same time, we also have, we're trying to get the realtor on board so we can look at the properties that you guys are sending over and any other properties that might be good to compare this to.
Great. Any questions, Legislator Stewart?
What is the process that the county has to go through to look at properties? I mean, I know that I've sent several listings out to people, and I'm like, how does that work?
So we're trying to get, once we have the realtor, once we have a contract with the realtor, we'll just send them over that person. So I have to check in on where that is specifically. Otherwise, we've been sending them to DPW, but we do need to get a standardized process.
Right.
That one person is the one going out looking at these properties.
Okay, so the standardized process is being kind of developed as we speak.
Yes. Ideally, it would be a realtor who is going out and doing this for us proactively, too, so that we're just looking at the listings that you guys are sending over. So I just need to see where that is at.
Because I have an idea I want to discuss with you about best practices with real estate transactions, whether they be purchases or leases.
Okay.
And so we'll discuss that.
Yeah.
At a later day.
Sure.
Soon.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And if I can just ask a question, I think it might be coming up. Just to be clear, is there a timeline on the hiring of the real estate agent?
Yes. Sorry, I just don't know what it is right now. I don't know if Dennis is under.
Well, I know that we've made a choice. We've interviewed two firms and made a choice. So my understanding is that that would come on right fairly quickly.
Okay. So the county would be represented by one agent or one brokerage or two agents from two different brokerages? Or how
right
are you
now, because of the way the RFP is written, it's one agent. And the question that we're asking ourselves back through purchasing is whether or not we need to essentially deal with the issue of conflicts if that agent is the listing agent. So that's a real concern, and we're working through that right now.
Well, that is a huge concern, and I know that as a real estate agent that, I was kind of flabbergasted when I found out the county had been working for years and years and years in real estate sales where they only had one agent representing both the buyer and the seller.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was so glad that we changed that policy earlier this year. But I was, like I said, I was kind of appalled that we were doing it for so many years in the old way.
Yeah. I would say there is a standard process in terms of the acquisition. One is a letter of intent. The second piece is making sure that we have an appraisal. And there's a phase one environmental work to make sure we're not doing anything relative to the environmental issues associated with the project. And then last but not least is the use we're proposing consistent with the local zoning statute.
Right. Okay, so I'll be in touch with actually both of you over this, so thank you so much.
Legislator Petit?
Thank you. So this is probably a similar project to the Respite House, or maybe not, because we do already own this property. But, I mean, how much longer do you think, would it behoove us to take no action on this again this month to give the executive's office more time? Have you gone out for RFPs, or what timeline are you looking at?
We have not gone out for RFPs because we want to understand, we need to understand fully the implications of the ARPA funding before we do that. So I think no action would be best. And then I'm hoping to hear back within the next, I don't know when they'll get back to us, but hopefully within the next couple of weeks. And then we can do an RFP, an RFP or RFPI when we get back.
And is this similar to the Respite House? I mean, we've been talking about the Ellenville property, and I think People USA or Access are interested in it, but...
Similar in, well, the difference is that we're actively trying not to own the property for the Respite House to avoid this situation, so we're trying to find a nonprofit who will either own the property or lease the property. So I don't know what your question is in terms of similarity.
I thought we were going to use some ARPA money towards that. I mean, we had allocated some. I think it was, 4.5, so a million or so was going to be going towards respite housing. But so that was not for the purchase. It was for contracting vendors.
So it didn't specify in the resolution whether it was for the purchase or anything. It just says the policy was for the county to open a respite house. We decided not to purchase because we're, you know, obviously going through some kinks with the properties that we purchased. So, but that we're still working on getting that allocation spent.
Okay.
Working on negotiating contracts with people for them to operate the rest of the house.
Okay.
All right, any further questions? Otherwise, I would be supportive of us taking no action on this one. All
right. Seems right.
Okay, so then I believe we can just move forward to Resolution 469, authorizing commencement of the process of direct sale of the property located at 21 Elizabeth Street, City of Kingston. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
Second. And on this, similar, is there anything further that you'd like to add?
No.
Okay. Now, we do have the sponsor of this resolution here, so I would like to give Legislator Roberts the opportunity to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad to hear that the executive's office is cutting their losses on this building and thinking about selling it or giving it to a nonprofit. Which is it?
Well, that's part of what we would need to get clarity on the ARPA side. Like, if we're allowed to transfer it, or is it, we have to get an interpretation of what happens if you sell a property that we bought using our public
money. And I just, I have questions about the contacts with the ARPA. I mean, do they have a department down in Washington? How does that work? You call somebody, you leave a message, and they call you back in 2 or 3 weeks? I find that hard to believe that, you know, for a multi-billion dollar stimulus money or whatever they gave out, that, you know, we have to wait 2 or 3 weeks to get an answer.
I don't know if this is something the ARPA team is
I can share what I've done. I think it might have moved on to perhaps the county attorney's office at this point, but there is a call line. We have the number. We have reached out. It is kind of like a general call line. When I talked to somebody, this was going back a few weeks, they said somebody would be in touch, and we did get some information. It wasn't exactly on point. It was an indication maybe we could utilize lost revenue, but again, they didn't fully address, you know, a sale of the property. And I think that's where, because there is a very distinct rule within the uniform guidance about federal interest and getting, if a sale was to happen, you would need to get guidance. And we haven't fully gotten an answer on that, and I think there's efforts to try to get more of an answer.
So you said there's a distinct rule. What is it, just to get guidance, or is there a rule?
No, I know it's been provided to other committees, and it can be provided to this one if needed, but it's part of the uniform guidance, which is a body of rules within the federal government. And there's one specific one about if federal interest is used in the circumstance of buying property, and then if that property is sold. And that's the concern. I think it's definitely not very long. It's worth looking at it. I think one of the problems is that that rule is a little bit vague. It basically says you do need to reach out if you're going to sell, and you do need to get guidance from the federal government, and the guidance will be one of three things, and then there's a little bit of a description about what those things can be, but it's unclear.
If you don't mind, what are the three things?
I don't have that off the top of
my head,
unfortunately, but it certainly could potentially provide more if that was something that was needed. The law is very easy. It's online. I can provide it.
Level of it is there maybe some kind of clawback provision, so that's what we're trying to interpret. Like if you're transferring it for a dollar, is there any implication of that, or no? Do we just need to get it approved? If we're selling it, is there any implication of that in terms of our ARPA funding? So that's what we're trying to get some clarity on.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, you probably heard we debated this last month. I wasn't here, but I would appreciate an up or down vote on this. If it fails, then at least we have another month to do the petition of discharge, and the county executive office could get more information for the whole body to debate it.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan?
So I'm not opposed to an up or down vote, absolutely. But I think we've just heard that there is considerable legal question about the implications of a sale. And I don't know how we would move forward with a sale. So I think that to push to have have this somehow move and then come before the body just puts that... would the sponsor contemplate voting to proceed with a sale without knowing whether it's legal to do that sale that way?
I could tell you the timeline. You know, it wouldn't be in the September meeting session. We'd have to do the petition to discharge. It would happen in the October meeting. If there was no information at that point, we could, or the county exec really needs more time, we could table it on the floor in October session, or we could have an up or down vote. You got to keep in mind too, Legislator Nolan, this has been going on since May.
But I do keep that in mind. I think it has been going on because of good reasons. Actually, not persuasive reasons to me. I would be proceeding with the renovation and the use of this building if my approach to this project were in play. That would be costly, but I think it would have some benefits. This is costly without having much benefit so far. The idea of selling a building where we don't know if we're going to, you know, the federal government's going to come after us, we don't know what we owe them, if anything, without legal clarity, nobody goes into the sale of a building for, you know, $70,000 with this much lack of information. So I'm hard-pressed to support an up or down vote because I think it puts us in a position of taking a vote that puts the county at legal jeopardy. And so I would be much more inclined to make a motion to postpone. And if it's over your objection, then that can get you somewhere to your timeline. But I think it's really wrong-headed what you're suggesting. But that's why I'm just explaining why I can't support what I would normally support, which is your request for an up or down vote.
Understood.
Legislator Stewart?
I have reservations with how this process has proceeded with Elizabeth Manor. That said, I agree with Legislator Nolan in that I think it would be premature to take a vote on this until we have more information as to the legality of what we're planning or perhaps planning to do. And I think we'd want to hear more input from legal as well as the county executive's office.
I'd be curious to hear what others think, if anyone hasn't spoken yet. I'm personally inclined to honor the sponsor's request to grant an up or down vote. As someone who has had legislation stuck into committee before, I know how frustrating it can be, and I know my vote would be in the negative on the sale tonight, but I respect the interest of the sponsor in having a vote. Anyone else?
Call a question.
Well, there's no motion yet, but I would make a motion that we postpone for a month.
I would second that motion.
Okay, so that motion has a second. Discussion on the motion to postpone.
I've pretty much already explained why I would do it. I think we need to hear more from legal before we could proceed.
Anyone else?
I mean, I had the same feelings that you do. It can be frustrating going to months and months of meetings. I would like to give it another month to see if we can't make some headway. But, I mean, if you're going to call the vote, I would be a yes, because I also don't think we should be holding the property. I'm in a real pickle right now, because I would like to salvage what we can. However, if it's not salvageable, then I'd have to say yes, sell it.
Well, first we got to get through the motion.
But first we got to get through the motion to postpone. So I would want to follow the will of the sponsor.
Okay. Anyone else on the discussion on the postponement? Otherwise, I'll call the question on the postponement. All right, I'll call the question on the postponement. All those in favor of postponing 1 month?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
I'll be opposed. So the postponement fails. Any further discussion on the resolution? Otherwise, I will call the question on the resolution. I will take the postponement vote as a sign of the will of the committee to have an up or down vote tonight.
Yeah, it's on the floor, I guess.
Yep. All those in favor of Resolution 469?
Aye.
All right, all those opposed? And I'll be opposed. So Resolution 469 is defeated.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Legislator Roberts. Resolution 473, approving changes of a subordination mortgage to a restrictive covenant with Silver Garden Senior Housing Development through ARPA, through the Department of Finance, Division of Recovery and Resilience. Can I have a motion to discuss? Moved by Nolan,
and I'll second
by Stuart, I am not sure who is best on the executive branch, but I will defer to Mr. Litwin.
Thank you. This has been in front of the legislature previously. This was, and this has to go back a year in everyone's memory, because this was went through both a funding resolution and went through both a contract resolution, and the funding resolution actually had a piece of the resolution was inserted to ensure that, and I guess maybe just back up even further, the funding resolution was for $600,000 for Silver Gardens, which is a affordable housing development largely for seniors that is in the development stages in the town of Lloyd. And so that funding was approved, and a contract with RUPCO as sub-recipient was also approved. In the funding resolution, it's not the exact terms, but it's essentially subject to an exhibit which was attached to the resolution, which was this recapture provision. And it was to ensure that there would be, I believe it was 15 years, so that the money the county puts in has a mechanism to return to the county if the development doesn't do what they say they're going to do for affordable housing. And so that attachment to that resolution was drafted, was put in. But of course, given the year of history, and now happily RUPCO and the development has received large state funding so it can go forward, I've met with both the county attorney and the attorney for RUPCO you know, there's been some things to work out as far as the different funding sources involved and how everything can work for this large closing that's going to be about $20 million with many different funding sources. And I think we have now, there wasn't a mechanism in that resolution to, for the county attorney or the council for the legislature to approve changes. So we're back in front of the legislature to be sure that we got this right and to be transparent. And that's what's in front of you. It's just the amended position.
Great. Any questions from the committee? Yep, legislator, no, legislator Erner.
Thank you. I have a few questions and a couple of comments. I listened to the, as best I could, it was difficult for me to hear, but I listened to the audio back of the, excuse me, the presentation by the RUPCO project manager in the ARPA committee. I'd love to have that project manager come and address us, but barring that, and I hadn't quite realized that RUPCO was involved. I remember when we provided some funds for the geothermal system. So let me start with my comments, which are that this organizational chart in here is very confusing. So that's one of the things I'd love an explanation of from either them or whoever can do it. And also there's a stipulation here from the state under senior housing programs that the regulatory agreement requires a minimum 40-year agreement. So I see in here 30 years. So the first question is, what's up with that?
Okay.
So I think the question is, why is the regulatory agreement from the state 40 years when ours is 30 years?
That's my first question, yeah.
Great, okay. You are right, I think generally. I think I had it wrong when I said 15 years. I think it is 30 years, which I can check here if you want. But because I did pull out my copy now for the rest of this recapture. What's good to know, in response to your question, is that the state, there's a lot of different funding sources coming in, many of them from the state, and the state restrictions are often even more stringent than the county restrictions. I don't think it's bad or wrong for the county to have our own restriction, but we're basically in line as a funding source and also in line as a restriction. So there's going to be multiple layers ensuring this property retains its affordability, even longer than ours.
Okay.
You can continue.
Thank you. Under our restrictive covenant, item one, it mentions affordable at the following income levels. Are we using the Ulster County Local Law 3 of 2023 definition of affordable, and or if not, which definition of affordable are we using?
Forgive me, I'm not aware of the Ulster County Law definition of affordable. But my hope is that we've been pretty specific, and a lot of these restrictions as far as the AMI and the 10 units and the 60% AMI is pretty specific, so I'm hoping that's accessible to the legislature, and it also is in line with what's been put forward in applications for 9% funding to HSA to the state.
I guess I'd appreciate some clarity about the affordable there, because it's clear to me what the AMI levels are, but it's not clear to me what the people would pay. If it's based on the state's definition or our definition or someone else's definition. And the definition is what we adopted when we made, excuse me, affordable housing a public purpose of Ulster County earlier this year. That's the local law I was referring to.
Okay.
Maybe I can help.
Yeah, please.
Director Doyle?
Sure. Thank you. So to answer your question, low-income housing tax credit financing at the 9% level would meet the county's goal or local law with respect to below 80%. Typically for these projects, they're below 60% or 60% and below, and they reach a level of incomes that range all the way down to 30% up to 60%. So they would meet the requirements for the county law. I would also add that this wasn't funded with county funds, it was funded with the ARPA funds, so they're not really restricted from the county law as well. But it will meet that AMI. And in terms of the rent paid, it can be no more than 30% of the income of the individual in that particular apartment.
Can we put that in there somewhere, just to make that super clear?
Well,
modify.
It's in the regulations that will govern how the project unfolds.
This is a contract that we're approving. I'm hesitant to make material changes or changes that we intend to be material. And if we don't intend it to be material, I'm hesitant for that reason as well.
Okay. I have two more questions.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is this... there's been some discussion in other projects about if someone's income changes, if they would become disqualified from continuing to live there. How's that handled in this restrictive covenant, if it is?
Director Doyle, is that something that you'd like to speak to?
It is, but my memory is short on this, so you have to forgive my senior moment. I believe that under the low-income housing tax credit program, there is an allowance for income increases. Something wants to tell me it's 110%, but I'm not sure of that. Don't quote me on that. But if your income levels do change, the short answer is that there is an allowance for that income level to change. There also may be an allowance within the project itself. There may be an allowance with respect to what unit you're qualifying for. So there may also be an allowance with that. Thinking about this is that there's layered units here in terms of the income levels that are being utilized. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Yep. Go ahead, Phil, if you want to keep with your questions.
Thanks. My last question, yes. So the sample mortgage here that's among the... This is from RUPCO. There's a bunch of black lines. Is that just what's going to get... Or black blocks that gets filled in at some point, or how does that work?
Yeah. So when we were getting ready for the ARPA committee... some of the feedback I got in preparation for that committee meeting was that money will go as a subrecipient contract to RUPCO, but then RUPCO is going to transfer it to the partnership so that it can be utilized for the project. And that goes into the significant, I realize, organizational structure of how the development is going to be owned and operated and all the different entities involved. Fully understand how that is an area of question. And because of that, I reached out to RUPCO and they were able to provide, and this is a template contract, which is why some things are blacked out. But this is what they would use to, so that at least there's a demonstration and an understanding of a little bit more of how this would work, that this would be how they, when they receive the money as a subrecipient, then it would be lent to the partnership.
Thank you. Any questions from anyone else on the committee? All right, then I will call the question on 473. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 473 is approved unanimously. Resolution number 480, amending the 2023 to 2027 Capital Improvement Program, establishing Capital Project 677, Golden Hill Transportation Improvements, amending the 2023 Capital Fund Budget through the Department of Planning.
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan and seconded by Corcoran, and I will defer to Director Doyle for a very brief overview of what's happening here.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are two distinct portions of this project. One has to do with a gate at Glen Street to restrict access to Glen Street to emergency vehicles only. That gate was promised as part of the ongoing discussion between the counties, and I mean ongoing, this goes back probably 20 years, discussion between the impact of the Golden Hill facilities on Glen Street. So that would be the first thing that this capital project would cover. The second piece of this was discovered when we looked at the amount of work that was the traffic generation from the affordable housing project on Golden Hill. There was a traffic study done by Penrose that suggested that a signal at the intersection of Route 32 and the Golden Hill Drive was not needed. There was a subsequent study by the City of Kingston that said even if the project wasn't there, that the traffic generation and the issues associated with site distances for that access coming out of Golden Hill was a recommendation for a traffic signal at that location. Both Penrose and the county decided to pursue, well, it was a condition of the approval, decided to pursue a signal with respect to that. And so this amendment to establish this capital project would pay for the design for the gate and the design for the signal at the intersection of Golden Hill. It does not pay for the capital cost. There is a capital program. In the capital program, there's a recommended cost associated with these projects.
If I could just jump in on that, is that where the discrepancy in cost comes in? Because it's this is $42,000 that we're being asked for here. It mentions that there's a total design cost for all work combined is $56,000. In the backup that was provided.
A couple things. Yeah. One is the fact that there's some contingency in here relative to those design things to make sure that we have enough money in the capital program to do contingency with respect to the contracts that were out here. So the two contracts combined will be less than $50,000, so the legislature will not see those two contracts. So we're back here basically asking for the money. The reason the money being asked for is more than $50,000, just in case we've run into contingencies associated with that design, in which case we'd come back to the legislature for that work.
Okay. Yep, Legislator Stewart.
Question for Director Doyle. And it doesn't necessarily pertain to this exact project, but when the county does traffic studies, is there a given time that they, I mean, is it like a standard time they do that? Like, for example, do they say, let's do it on Monday morning at 8 o'clock, or are all different times? Because I've understood that sometimes traffic studies are conducted on Sunday afternoons at 3 p.m., and sometimes they're done on, you know, Tuesday mornings at 9, and therefore you can get radically different results.
Yeah, there's a yes and no to that question, and if I may take a bit of the committee's time. Traffic studies are done generally on the basis of, for if you're dealing with existing conditions, you're looking at traffic studies that look at existing conditions and the traffic associated with that. They're generally looked at p.m. peak hours, what they call p.m. peak hours.
Okay.
That's what they particularly look at. There are some exceptions to that, and those exceptions would be in areas where you have high retail traffic, in which case they'd probably look at a Saturday afternoon or late Saturday afternoon traffic for those p.m. peaks. We do have some exceptions to that. New Paltz has a p.m. peak that is probably less than some of the Sunday afternoon peaks in terms of people moving back and Friday evening peaks moving back and forth.
Right.
This traffic study is based on a proposal, existing traffic coming out of the site that we know of, plus a proposal to add housing units associated with the low and moderate income housing project up there. That work is done based on ITE, Institute of Traffic Engineers, estimates of what a traffic generation would be for those particular units. So there's formulas that are used, and you look at those estimates, and they include peak hour trips, and they also include total trips. So that's how this was done.
So there is some consideration taken of when those peak hours.
Yeah, it's not pick the best hour, you know, and for your own particular reasons.
Right. Okay.
No, that's not what happened.
Okay, well, thank you for that.
Yeah. And the reason it was a disagreement, quite frankly, the reason it was a disagreement between the traffic study that was done by Penrose and the traffic study was done by the city was there are site distance issues associated with people making turns in and out. There are substandard site distances at the intersection. The current speed limit at the intersection is 30 miles an hour. The current average speed at the intersection is 42 miles an hour. Drop the average speed to 40 and all the site distances come into play that they currently meet standards. So the thought from the Penrose folks and from the county was, why don't we work on enforcement and warnings of this intersection rather than signalization. The problem with signalization from our perspective or from the other perspective is because of the vertical curves associated with that area, people that back up while they're trying to make left-hand turns or stopped at the light, as people come over that hill, then we get rear-end accidents, mm-hmm. right? And when we look at the total accident numbers out there, they're very, very small. I believe it's a 7-year period, there were five crashes at the intersection. Out of those five, believe it or not, I believe four of them were deer. I don't know what dear they must know something about Golden Hill that we don't, but the crash history wasn't significant enough. Nevertheless, the city basically made the recommendation, and when you read their report, that report indicates that the recommendation for a signal is both with or without the project that a signal is needed.
Yep, Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. I'm happy that this is going to move ahead, pending this vote, and I think so many of my constituents will be too, who are residents of the area. Has the county had discussions? I've heard from the a member of the County Traffic Safety Board that the mayor is adopting safe systems as a traffic safety approach, and I think that has happened since this memo from Public Works. Maybe it was in April. Has the county had any communication with the mayor about his, like, does he approve of it? I know that the commission came through the city, but is he aware of this moving ahead in this way?
The short answer would be yes. I can't speak for the mayor, but I mean, his planning board made the recommendation, and we have been working with the mayor's office and others in the city with respect to the gate and the signal, because we want to make sure that all the first responders are involved and understand what's happening out here. So the city engineer's office has been involved, et cetera, et cetera. We do intend to, when we look at this, we do intend to allow the city to take control of the intersection and assume maintenance of that signal relative to that. And that conversation has been ongoing.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
If I may, just as an add-on, the state of New York has now adopted the safe systems report approach as well, which wasn't the case a couple of months ago.
Okay.
Do you have a final question?
Yes, thank you. It relates to the chair's question, actually. The report from Creighton Manning mentioned also the traffic signal in Mount Marion. Are we also approving the design for that in this legislation?
Yeah, that's going to be handled through what we did in order. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, go ahead.
What we did in order for us to make sure that we had the best quote with respect to these designs was combine the two signals and ask for a quote relative to all three projects coming together versus individually. And so when we did that, we got a better quote. But we're going to pursue them in different contracts.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? All right, otherwise, I will call the question on Resolution 480. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 480 is approved unanimously. Resolution 482, authorizing a memorandum of agreement with the Village of New Paltz to provide water to the Ulster County Veterans Cemetery through Veterans Services Agency. Can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Moved by Nolan, second by Petit. And Director Cosopoli, if you want to give us a brief overview here.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, this resolution is for the agreement to water the landscaping there. We had a couple different options when we created the cemetery, and this wound up being the best one for us, and it worked at the time of the finishing of the cemetery. And the village graciously agreed to letting us tap into their line, and we're going to be utilizing it. I would imagine the first couple of years would be heavier, but then once it's established and rolled forward, I don't see it being something that's substantial at all. But I'm just getting that grass growing and looking great, like the rest of the cemetery is.
Great. Any questions? Yep, Legislator Erner.
Thank you. Would Public Works do the work to make the connection?
So the connection's already happened. It was done by the contractors. Anything going forward, though, once warranties or any issues have passed, then our Public Works would be involved, along with the village, who also oversaw certain connections and points into their line.
Great. Legislator Erner, go ahead.
Thank you. Recently in the news, dispute between the village and New York City Environmental Protection over water. Did that enter into any of the discussions? Is there any concern on your part that this water might be coming from via New Paltz from New York City and whatever problems they're having?
Yeah, it wasn't something that was brought to my attention. It wasn't something brought to us by the village either, or any concerns that they share.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, Legislator Stewart.
While we're discussing loans at the cemetery, I was wondering if you had any information as to whether the county applies herbicides there, or what are the policies regarding herbicides and pesticides at the cemetery?
I'll have to look into it. I don't believe we apply anything.
Great.
Down there. It is New Paul Ferrell Cemetery's land still, you know, even though it's our cemetery and we have an easement to it. And they help oversee everything as well, and they work on the ground as well as we do. And I don't believe that they do anything like that either.
Legislator Nolan?
Excellent, thank you.
No, that covers it.
Okay, great. All right, any other questions? All right, I'll call the question on resolution 482. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 482 is unanimous. Resolution 518, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $7,400, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 as assumed by the county with the Hudson Valley National Center for Veteran Reintegration, Inc., through the Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion discussed? Moved by Nolan.
Second.
Second by Petit. Is there?
I'm sorry, I was confused. What resolution are we
on? 518.
Okay, thanks. I seem to have skipped something here. Okay.
The agenda printed has the resolutions in a different order than they are in the packet.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, we've grouped them, and there's going to be a couple of groupings later that are
that are out of order. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. There's a great method to this, and we have our wonderful Deputy Clerk Mahler to thank, because it does make things go more smoothly. But we're on Resolution 518, there is a motion from Nolan, and do you have a second recorded yet? And a second from Petit. Wonderful. And I will defer to Commissioner McDonald to give a brief overview on this.
Sure.
I know I see Mark here, but it is technically your department, so we'll start with you.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry, I was just complacent and waiting for the end of the meeting. So this is it's additional money that came in from the State Office of Mental Health to be able to provide to the state. They, just as Director Dawson said, they send money as they choose based on their own budget season, and we happily accept it. And a lot of these resolutions are that.
Great. And is there anything, Director Costapoli, you'd like to add?
I'm here to answer any questions about the program itself. I know that sometimes stuff comes up.
Great. All right, Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I would just say that this is a peer program, and it's 100% state-funded, so this is great.
Great.
Yeah.
Yep. Any other questions? Yeah. Legislator Petit?
I do have a question. It's my understanding that they had lost their office that they were using and that they're looking for another place. So, and I don't know even who to direct this to, but they're not receiving any funding until they start the program up, or do they
have
temporary offices?
Yes.
Okay.
So they have temporary offices. It's over on Grant Avenue, the office space that we have ownership of right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, they had to move out of the Tech City. There were multiple buildings in the Tech City, from Bank of America to the other side. But long story short, the center itself has multiple programs and kayak building and a lot of different things that are, help veterans. But the vet-to-vet program is what this is for. That has sustained throughout. That is really a veteran peer-to-peer support. It is a one-to-one mostly. And the offices that we've helped provide throughout have allowed them to continue that program. I am happy to say, though, that they did find space as recently as this week. Make Joanna very happy too. 12,000 square foot property in Saugerty that they signed a lease on.
Nice, okay.
So that's going to be huge going forward.
Excellent. So I'll pass that information along because
yes.
It was a veteran who really did enjoy that program, and he was upset that they weren't there, or I don't know what had happened.
Yeah, it's going to pick back up all the way around. All of their programs are going to pick back up. It'll take a little time to get them going again. But the main peer-to-peer has continued to sustain and will continue to sustain.
Great. All right. Any other questions or discussion items from the committee? All right. And I'll call the question on Resolution 518. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. 518 is unanimous. Resolution 487, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a grant application with required assurances for the New York Connects program with the New York State Office for the Aging to the Office for the Aging.
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan, second by Petit. And Director Copenhaver, do you want to give us a little bit of overview?
Thank you very much. We had to adjust the budget because New York Connects decided to give us even more money. Don't say no. never say no. And we hope that it will, and Joanna, I still have to flesh this out, but we hope that it can support either a full-time consultancy or a full-time staff position to be lodged in Ellenville, which would be really wonderful.
Yeah.
And that's part of this, and we hope that we actually get to spend all the money. Sometimes we don't, and that's all this is.
Any questions, comments, concerns? Legislator Stewart.
I was just going to say, I think it's great that we're doing this in Ellenville. So,
yeah.
And the kiosk. It'll pay for the kiosk. I called New York Connects about that, too.
Nice.
This would be a kiosk that shows like how many resources and other resources that would be at the tree. So both of these things we're trying to are part of the Trudy Farber kind of revitalization. So the kiosk would be like maybe in the lobby somewhere. We're trying to work it out.
And if you ever go into People's Place, they have a kiosk that's really good. And I'm trying to model it on that.
Great. All right. Any other questions, comments, concerns? All right. I will call the question on Resolution 487. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? 487 is unanimous. Resolution 488, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $62,500 entered into by the county with Hallwick Law, LLC, office through the Office for the Aging.
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan.
Okay.
Second by Petit. And Director Copenhaver, do you want to give us a brief overview?
Yes, this is just the contract extension for another year for Erica Hallwick, which is our legal representative in the office, who, for those of you who don't know, does mostly wills and powers of attorney and healthcare proxies for senior citizens at a very reasonable or no rate, and also advises them on other things, although she does not litigate for our folks. We send those to the Hudson Valley Legal Services program.
Any questions, comments, or concerns?
Have a question, and I haven't verified it because my friends are older and they get confused, and I think we've had discussions about other programs, which leads me to think maybe they weren't even calling Office of the Aging. It could have been another resource, but the attorney's not backed up at all. Is there a substantial wait for no? Okay.
No, right. Usually we're able to, well, they're in emergencies, right? Most of the time a will is not an emergency.
If it is, it's too late.
Unless something sudden happens.
Yeah.
But we tend to be able to get people within a month. Right now she's on maternity leave as of today.
Oh.
So she probably won't be back till November. We don't have a coverage, so we will refer elsewhere.
So I just have a question regarding the cost. You mentioned that there is that it's often no cost, but sometimes there is a cost. And
we
so if it's a service that we're paying, like go ahead.
We are allowed to ask for a contribution, but we are not allowed to charge for it.
And where does the contribution go?
Mm. We put it in our fund as part of the legal. You know, we put it. If we get a contribution for the food program, we put it in the food program. We get contributions for this, we put it in the legal program.
Okay. So it's encumbered to provide more of these types of services? Like, meaning it's line item for that?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, there's not a lot of money involved. We're not talking about hundreds of thousands
yeah.
of dollars. You know, if people can afford it, we ask them, we suggest that they make a $20 contribution for a visit. Some people can afford it, some people cannot.
Right. Are there, I mean, I guess my question is, like, if we're putting money in to make sure that other people who can't afford it are able to have access to it, that would imply that there are people who can't afford it who aren't able to have access to it without these funds. I'm just kind of curious, like, if we're funding this, like, I would, if I hear that people are making donations as individuals to make sure that these legal services are available, my response to that as a legislator is, why don't we just fund it, which is what we're doing. So I'm just...
We do fund it.
Yeah.
I mean, the federal government funds it through one of the title programs.
Okay.
It's completely funded.
Yeah.
But...
So then when would those funds be drawn down, the donation funds?
That I can get you an answer from Deb.
Okay.
How she does that. Again, we're not talking about a lot of money. And again, I think that we offer people the opportunity to show their gratitude, and that's how they do it.
Yeah.
Because... Here you've gone through this will and power of attorney. She's a wonderful lady. She's great. And they want to give something, and we are actually obligated to ask. I mean, it's not something I really even want to do
right.
for food or for legal, but NYSOFA asks us to do this. So we offer them the opportunity to do it.
Right.
And many of them are gratified or grateful to have, you know, have this weight off their shoulders. They have everything in place or whatever. She's very clear about how it's done, and they give us a donation.
So, just to follow this line, I'm surprised that NYSOFA asked you to do that, because I have questions about whether it's legal for you to do that, as I hear about it. So, but if you're under direction from a state agency, I will just note that I am surprised, and I just trust you to implement it in the way that you have been doing.
I was surprised by it too.
It sounds like it's more, you know, along the lines of a tip or a thank you.
It is more like that, and especially for the food, because we pay, you know, $11.04 a meal to Gateway, right? And when you send out a letter, because you have to put it in writing at the bottom of something, our suggested contribution for a meal is $3. Okay, great. But people want to give because they feel like we don't ask them to pay for the congregate meals. We don't ask them to pay for the home delivery meals. Everything is, certainly the congregate meals have nothing to do with the income. But they want to give.
So
yeah.
if I could, I think that it might be worth just a small conversation with somebody from the executive's office or the county attorney's office, because rather to the chair's point about this not going to fund the program, I think there should be something in your office that doesn't have funding that funding is dedicated towards, because then it will keep clear the funding stream. But if you're saying a state entity wants you to have records of it. Yeah, it's just a mess.
They keep track of our donations. We have that listed separately. That's
uh-huh.
all tracked, right?
Okay, so there's a place in the budget for it.
Mm-hmm. There is. It's part of it. But I can certainly ask our finance coordinator, what is she doing with the money in the diff? I know for the food program, it goes back into the food program. So, you know, we can find out about that. It would be great, but most of our things, except for some staff members, are funded.
Yeah.
You know, we're a very low-cost office to the county.
Great.
So I need to spend money to keep up with what we've been giving.
I would like to close the can of worms officially.
Well, honestly, this
screw
has
on
been
the
going
list.
On for many, many years.
Yeah,
and maybe
I get
this
that.
Is the first time you've heard of it, but all of the documentation that we send out to our constituents and our clients have to say this. So just so you know, I'm going to guess. I'm assuming they know. You know what they say about assuming, but I'm assuming that this has all been passed by legal many, many years ago to do this. NYSOFA is the first in the first string. So.
All right. Any further questions, comments, or concerns? All right. We'll call the question on 488. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. 488 is unanimous. Resolution 491, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with the preschool special education and related services program with the Pine Bush Central School District through the Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Second.
All right, moved by Stuart, second by Nolan. And Commissioner Iaposi, do you want to give us a brief background?
Sure, and I'm actually going to ask our Deputy Commissioner of Children and Family Services, who previously supervised the preschool and early intervention program, Rita Wood, and Rita has attended the meeting previously.
So Pine Bush has reached out to us, and they want a contract for special education services for preschoolers in their district, and that's what this contract is. It'll be for direct services, special education, OT, PT, speech, whatever would be other students' IEP. And the state says they can do it, so we're happy that they're willing to do that for us.
Wonderful. All right. Any questions from the committee? Comments, concerns? Legislator Petit?
Is this in addition to the Head Start program?
It's separate from the Head Start program.
Separate. Okay.
Yeah. So it's the special education. It's Part B of the federal special education law, and it's for 3 to 5 year olds that have been evaluated by the district. By state and approved evaluating agencies, mm-hmm. and they meet the qualifications for special education services. And because they're under the age of 5, mm-hmm. the county's responsible for those children to pay for those services.
And how do they get qualified? I mean, considering they're too young to actually be in school and get tested at that point, is there a referral system?
Families would refer. Either refer themselves, or a community member or a doctor can refer to the school district where the child resides. And then we have 13 to 14 agencies that are approved to do the evaluations based on state ed requirements, and they have to meet those requirements. A 33% delay in one area of the five areas of development, standard deviations, a combination of things. So we follow those regulations. And then the district, the Committee on Preschool Special Education, which is set up by the district, the county is a member of, will determine if that child meets those qualifications. If they do, then we come up with an individual education plan for those services.
Mr. Stewart.
When you're formulating these plans, how do you take in consideration a situation, like for example, if a child was in emergency housing, mm-hmm. and one, you know, they're in Kingston for 3 weeks, they're in Ellenville for 3 weeks, they're in mm-hmm. New Paltz for 3 weeks. I mean, how do you
so
do
that? So we work with the families to determine where their last permanent residence was, mm-hmm. And we work with that school district. The family has a choice through McKinsey-Vento to either stay with that original school district or go to the district that they're housing in for that. With preschool special education, it's kind of easy because we're the whole county, DSS covers the whole county, so as long as I have an IEP from one district, then I can service them. You know, depending on who the providers are, we then contract out for those services.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. All those in favor of Resolution 491?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 491 is unanimous. Resolution 492, amending the 2023 budget to accept allocation from Office of Victims Services for Victims of Crime Act Victims and Witness Assistance Grant Program, Department of Social Services. Mm. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan.
Yes.
Second by Corcoran. and Commissioner Iaposi, again, we'll defer to you for a brief overview.
Sure. Just briefly, this is an annual grant that we get from VOCA, and it's allocated to a position at our Family Children's Advocacy Center to provide for a probation victims advocate. And it covers the salary and the fringe. And there's a small amount of additional funds that is available that goes to some of the fuel and maintenance of our new mobile unit that we have, which is a motor home that's equipped as an office to be able to go throughout the county to accommodate interviews and meetings with clients that are being serviced by the FCAC.
Any questions? Legislator Erner?
Thank you. I'm not as familiar as I ought to be with the FCAC, but why is this not part of the Probation Department Crime Victims Assistance Program? Can you speak to that?
It is. The person is employed and is a member of the Ulster County workforce and supervised by the Crime Victims Assistance Program supervisor and is in that job title. So their individual who's in that job title is allocated to the FCAC. So it's a county employee with all the training that the CVAP unit provides for that job title. And the victim supports that are provided are to the families and the children who are victims of severe sexual abuse or serious physical assault. So it is in the probation unit.
See, and you were involved because?
Because we oversee the Family and Children's Advocacy Center. We have an interdepartmental agreement with probation to be able to receive the funding through DSS because VOCA awards it to us for the FCAC, and we have an agreement with them to have that staff person assigned to the FCAC.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments, or concerns?
All right, I'll call the question on Resolution 492. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 492 is unanimous. Now we have a handful of resolutions that relate to foster care services, and I would like to entertain a motion to block them because they're all basically doing the same thing. So I'll feed you the resolution. The language, and if someone wants to make the motion, I would appreciate it. You could just say so moved. I would entertain a resolution, or entertain a motion to block resolutions 493, 494, 498, 499, 505, 507, and 510.
Motion.
Second.
All right, moved by Corcoran, second by Nolan. Any discussion on the act of blocking them together? All right, I will call the question on making them into a block. All those in favor of blocking them together?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so these are now a block. We can vote on them as a block. I would take a motion to discuss the block.
So moved.
All right, moved by Nolan, second by Petit. And then I will now defer to Commissioner Iapost, who just gives a quick overview of what all these contracts are doing.
Sure. Thank you, Chairperson. Just briefly, with regard to all of these block resolutions, they relate to residential treatment facilities for adolescents that come into the care and custody of DSS or might be directed by the Ulster County Family Court as a result of their being the subject of a proceeding who have to be placed at residential treatment facilities. You'll see that the contract period for each of these agreements that are connected to the resolution were from July 1st, 2022 through 6/30/2024. We're essentially tracking what our expenditures have been at each of these facilities based on children in our custody who have been admitted at these facilities to ensure that as we continue to receive billing and invoices from them, that we have adequate not to exceeds in the contract. Rita, would you like to add something about the nature and subject of some of the circumstances that the children who go to these facilities are experiencing?
So actually, Jen and I, they will, some of them come through family court because they have probation, JD or other things that they've been charged with. We have several children coming out of hospitals, psychiatric hospitals, needing placement, higher level care. They're not able to be in a foster home or a therapeutic foster home due to their needs for basically 24/7. The hope is that they will be stepped down to group homes, therapeutic homes, and then foster homes with the intention to be right on a home if possible. This also incorporates the rate changes that came into effect as of July 1st, 2023 that go through June of 2024. So we also kind of did a historical look at what our numbers are and then added that increase into it for
I was just curious, how many children are currently in our foster care program?
For residential, we currently have about 60 altogether.
60.
Out of, probably in foster care, I have about 100 and probably another 100 more. That are in some stage of foster care placement.
So like 100 could be placed with families?
Families, adoptive families, kinship homes, relatives, family friends, things like that that end up at custody as well, where a family court has placed them with either another parent or another, again, family member. So that would also include them as well.
But there's 60 that are housed in these facilities.
Yes. The intention is always to get them out. Some are long-term placements, unfortunately, because they do not have a place to return home to,
right.
Or their level of need is such that their parents or family members aren't able to care for them.
And when do those children age out of care?
So they can age out at the age of 18. They can stay in until the age of 21. We try and, like, I have a 16-year-old right now. We're trying to get her into a placement where she can be in this residential facility towards the end, age of 18, move to what they call an independent living program or a SILP. And then the idea is that from 18 to 21, she would be in that program to support her for independent living. When they come out at 18, of course, a lot of 18-year-olds think that they know it all and they don't need to be in foster care anymore. So we do hook them up with community programs such as Family of Woodstock and different things. There is some aftercare that these agencies provide for 6 months afterwards. And the state does allow children over the age of 18 to re-enter foster care one time within a certain period of time of them leaving. Sort of. So
great.
We have to go back to family court for that.
Right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Yep, Legislator Erner.
Thank you. So on 499, with the Devereaux Foundation for Foster Care, it lists a center in Red Hook, Dutchess County, and then it also mentions the Children's Intellectual Developmental Disability Services campus in West Chester, Pennsylvania. Are we sending our foster kids over there?
We don't currently have foster kids at Devereaux right now. We have Ulster County pays for school placements for children that are in residential. So some of these programs also have an educational component where your school districts could place them there. And then Ulster County has the responsibility of paying their tuition or part of their tuition, and then we get reimbursement for it. So we have to contract with them in order to pay those bills.
And in that situation, does the county coordinate with the school districts, or do they just do that on their own?
Unfortunately not. They do it on their own. Based on the 5 to 21 special education regulations in New York State, they can do it on their own.
Any other questions? Yep, Legislator Erner.
And so this is a general question for most of these, and forgive me, I had a little trouble following the money trail, and this might seem more of a ways and means question, but a lot of these are look like various levels of increases to the contracts within the same period. For example, 498, we're increasing by 180,000. It was just 100,000 originally for a year. I could go one by one, or can you explain generally why these numbers are changing by pretty substantial amounts, even in the same contract period?
Again, it's going to be based on the state rate that is given by the state, and that's rate set by financial stuff and things that the programs send up to the state, and the state then certifies saying this is the amount that you pay. And then it depends on the number of children each year. So. You know, I may start out with maybe one child at the Kingston Children's Home, and then by the end of the year, it's my child for foster care plus possibly two other kids for the educational services. And each child has their own rate based on the structure set by the state for it. So it's ever evolving because kids are coming in and out of placements. They may be placed in October, and they stay till the next October, where others may be placed in July. And they're there for 2 years, so I'm paying last year's rate, and I'm paying the new rate for this coming year.
And the rates are set by the state, so they're not negotiated between us and each facility individually, and then the rates that are arrived at based on the level of services that a child might be receiving based on their particular circumstances and needs.
So it would be fair to say that this is a fairly standard adjustment that we should expect from year to year,
It's year to year, and sometimes just like preschool services, it can be backdated years for us. So, and I don't think these new rates came out until the end of July. That's why we have all these now, because we just block them every 7 months.
I've been here every year to basically advocate for these not to exceed amendments when they're in a contract period.
Any other questions from the committee? All right, then I will call the question on the block resolutions. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that block of resolutions is approved unanimously. Our next set of resolutions are also potentially to be taken in the block. These are regarding transportation providers for children enrolled in special education programs. And I will do the same thing I did last time, which is to say I would entertain a motion to block resolutions 495, 504, 506, and 508.
So moved.
All right, motion by Nolan, second by Petit. Any discussion on the act of blocking them? I'll call the question on the act of blocking them. All those in favor of blocking these resolutions together in a block?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, these resolutions are now part of a block. I would entertain a motion to discuss the block.
I'd like to move the resolutions.
Yep, move the resolutions for discussion, yep. So moved by Nolan.
Second.
Second by Corcoran. And I will, again, defer to Commissioner Iposi, who wanted to give us a very, very brief background on the transportation need that we're fulfilling.
I will briefly refer to Rita again to talk about these resolutions as they're related to the preschool program.
So they're all regarding our transportation costs. We contract out with bus companies to provide transportation for those children under the age of 5 that have been approved through preschool special education to attend what we call special education classes, either non-integrated or integrated. So those would be classes at, say, Center for Special Services, the Brookside School, wraparound services. We also have students that, because we have to place them closest to their home or childcare location, we have contracts with the agencies in Dutchess County, Orange County, Sullivan, and actually in Greene County, such as the Hudson Arc, Abilities First, things like that. If a parent is not able to transport the child to and from school, we are required to provide transportation within up to 50 miles based on the location where the school district has placed that child. And that includes children in emergency housing as well. It's blocked so that each transportation company can kind of work with the schools within those counties. We found that it was most cost efficient that way because some of our programs may have different buildings and we can combine those ones for that.
And all of the children that are transported to these locations are children that are eligible in Ulster County and reside in Ulster County, but just based on the location of some of the preschools that service them, that's why you'll see us going out of county.
And last year we had about 135 children that we transported.
Any other questions from the committee? Yep, Legislator Erner.
Thank you. Let's see here. Forgive me, the different blocks have slowed me down a little bit. On 495, this is with
Ernie Bus.
Ernie Bus, thank you.
Are they from Vermont? I'm sorry.
This is an I, yeah.
Okay. Bump. Actually, I don't have a question on that one. I'm going to move on to 504. I'll just note that on 504, Deputy Clerk Mahler and I had spoken, and we didn't have the correct backup for that following the new rate schedule, but I trust that that is all in order since it normally is looked at by other administrators.
My only question about 504 was that there was a contract amendment in 2022 that we were asked to approve, and it sounds like that amendment wasn't executed because it wasn't needed.
It may not be. So
yeah.
Matt Transport, they did, and they received the award for the Dutchess County school programs. So we may have started the contract because we had a student there, but if that student went to another program, we may never follow through with it because it was no sense to go through that piece of it. But we did put it in this amount because we have to do the increase. September 1st starts our new contract period, and there is a state education COLA increase for transportation that we have to put into play when we're planning out the services and things. So they have a rate. And then we have that 3.5% increase for each of those blocks.
Yep, Legislator Stewart, and then Petit.
And this is just kind of a random question. This is specifically regarding Resolution 503. It mentions that
is not part of this.
Oh, yeah. That's not part of the block. Okay, pardon me. Okay, a question for later.
I'm going to raise an objection.
503 is going to be a little bit later.
Okay.
Yep.
I do have a question about the process. There's about, 24, 25 emergency housing in multiple counties,
mm-hmm.
and there's only 4 bus companies. I mean, some of these kids, I'm told, need to get up like 6, 7 o'clock in
the
morning.
These three of our preschool students.
Okay.
So most of our children, we try and keep them, we can't have them on the bus more than 90 minutes. For that, and most of our programs for preschool start like at 9, so bell time is like 8:50, 8:45. So we're trying to keep them within 90 minutes of that piece of it. I can tell you for older students with the elementary and the high school, it is quite an early morning for them based on that. Those runs are set up by the school district.
Okay.
For that.
Even 90 minutes, that's a long time for
it is. We try not to.
One.
We start out in the beginning of the year with maybe an hour, but we always leave room for up to that 90 minutes. That's a state limit for us. The issue is as children get added throughout the school year, we don't have as many bus drivers, and unfortunately after COVID, we really hit a snag with having available buses available, and we were doubling up on things. It's been a little bit easier this school year, where we have more options, and they continue to get more aides and bus drivers.
So, and this is a direct route to the schools, or do they get them to a transit hub where
nope,
a bus
to the schools, but remember, we're picking
okay.
up door-to-door 3- and 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds, so we give them approximately 3 to 5 minutes to get from the door to the bus,
yes, to get
and not all our families are always on time, so my bus drivers are really good, and they sometimes will extend it
yeah.
for that,
okay.
and we try and pick them up the furthest out to the closest in, and drop them off closest in. The furthest out, so
yeah,
there's like one straight route.
I think it's really important to note, I mean, it has been a Herculean effort by these bus companies
mm-hmm.
to arrive at recruiting enough drivers
mm-hmm.
to be able to meet the demand, and under the circumstances, considering that they had a significant reduction of staff during the COVID pandemic, we're really fortunate, we're really grateful that they have been able to step up and meet the demand that we have. And then this is also in connection with other children that they're transporting. And just anecdotally, because it's been brought up and I appreciate it very much, you know, this is why for a county of our geographic size, when you look at emergency housing, it's not one-stop shopping. You can't just pick a location in Ulster County that you can house families who have become emergency homeless at, and then expect that children who are in school districts scattered throughout this county are going to be transported from that emergency housing location. And that's why when we talk about the fact that we use up to 20 to 25 different motels that are throughout the entire county, that's one of the major reasons driving that. You know, I mean, if we had an emergency housing facility, say, just in Kingston, that could accommodate 100 people, including, you know, families and children, but we had to transport those children to schools in the 8 or 9 districts. Now, this is why the ultimate solution is permanent, affordable housing developments in every municipality so that these families can remain where they become emergency homeless. And I appreciate that it's acknowledged and recognized here as one of the major priorities that we're constantly trying to accommodate. In the midst of having to move families around frequently, and now that the school year has begun, this is going to be something that, you know, you're focusing on. So thanks for mentioning that in the context of this program.
Any other questions from the committee?
Yes, if I can.
All right. Then I will call the question on the block of resolutions. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Those resolutions are unanimous. That brings us to Resolution 496, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $948,150 entered into by the county with Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster County to Department of Social Services. Moved by Nolan, second by Corcoran, and Commissioner Iacocci, or any of the deputies?
I'll handle this one.
Okay.
This is one, I guess we've all gotten to know each other pretty well, and this is one that I have to say that I'm very excited about, and I think it's a great accomplishment that going into the 23-24 winter season and the code blue season, we've been able to arrive at this contract with Catholic Charities to continue to provide the warming center services at Second Iglesia, and more particularly great news is that we are going to be continuously activated from November 1st, 2023 to March 31st, 2024, regardless of whether or not the temperature would warrant a code blue activation. So that's why this contract has increased. And I just wanted you to understand that, generally speaking, for that 5-month period, we usually have temperatures at 32 degrees or lower for probably at least 50 to 60% of the time. So during times when we didn't have temperatures at 32 degrees or lower, the warming center would close. It would not be activated. This is a major step forward towards providing continuity and stability at a location for people during the winter. I'm also very happy to report that based on our expenditures over prior Code Blue seasons, we received an allocation of $965,000. So it contemplates covering the expenditures that are incurred here. And I'm just really very grateful again for the partnership that we have with Catholic Charities in connection with providing this service. Again, it's a very challenging service to provide, and I know many of you have interacted and engaged with our community members and clients and constituents that utilize the warming center. They're also going to be providing some new positions to support the effort there, some behavioral therapists to engage with some of the more challenging individuals that come into the warming center that previously might have experienced issues that didn't make it possible for them to remain there. So we tried to address some of the circumstances that, you know, we were getting feedback on. And again, you know, this is a program that started prior to Code Blue in 2014, and like most of our programs, it has evolved. And the needs have increased as the years have elapsed, and particularly with the volume of people that we see. You know, we're confident that we've also experienced good support from a lot of other entities throughout the entire county in terms of transporting people to this location. So I'm very happy to see this resolution in front of the committee.
Great. Any questions from the committee?
Yeah, pleasure. So this is just one warming center, correct?
Correct.
Is the county looking at putting warming center in another location or additional locations?
We looked and exerted a lot of time and effort, and we were aiming at trying to find a location in Ellendale, and unfortunately those efforts were not able to arrive at finding a location. The county executive's office, Catholic Charities, we all worked closely. We visited many locations. It's very, very challenging, and although we know we have a lot of faith-based organizations that own property that could potentially be available and seem like a simple and viable option, it's much more complicated than that, because once a faith-based organization makes its property available to be utilized as a warming center, that brings all kinds of additional dynamics into their property that have to be able to interact with their congregation, other programs that they have, get-togethers, their faith gatherings, and although we saw faith-based organizations be interested, it wasn't something we were successful at arriving at in Ellendale. And another issue is the faith-based organizations have the permissible zoning to be able to participate in providing this activity. So again, you know, we've had a warming center in Kingston since the inception, and this was pre-Code Blue, going back to 2014, we feel like it's met the need, and we feel like other entities do transport individuals to this warming center when they arrive at identifying them in their community. And it's also not to say that in periods of bad weather or storms, that communities open up warming centers for a couple of days during a bad storm at a town hall or at a faith-based organization. So I think we've raised a lot of awareness, and we have a lot of collaboration and support. Now and again, knock on wood, you know, since 2014, I'm not aware of a weather-related serious injury or fatality in Ulster County because someone was literally left in the cold. And that's an enormous accomplishment when you consider the size of our county and the issue of homelessness and the fact that sometimes people are reluctant to come in for services. But the whole origins of Code Blue were to provide a place for people to be able to come to. So I think we're meeting that requirement.
Thank you. Any other questions?
No, I'd just like to say that, you know, that we did the $15 million in funding, and there is a housing funding program we're looking for outside the box. So perhaps we could work with some of the religious organizations for an additional building or something that would work with them if they were willing to, you know, do the program, but they didn't have a space that would be separate outside the box.
And I'd just like to commend the department for mm-hmm. this work. I mean, it really does meet a need, and we need to have that statistic. I mean, that needs to continue.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, if there's no further questions, then I'll call the question on Resolution 496. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 496 is approved unanimously. Resolution 497, approving the execution of a contract for $498,918 entered into by the county with Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster County, the Department of Social Services.
So moved.
Moved by Nolan, second by Petit. Commissioner Iposte, you want to give us a very brief overview?
Sure. This is another wonderful program that's continuing to allocate funding for a rental assistance program. What's encouraging about this is that the eligibility criteria include undocumented individuals being able to apply. One of the reasons that Catholic Charities was selected was as a result of their ability to have engagement with that portion of our community. And then this round of funding is also being made available for retroactive rental assistance. So we're looking forward to being able to provide support to families and individuals that are trying to remain in the residential locations where they are.
Legislator Petit and then Stewart.
So if someone was interested in additional assistance, they could reach out to Catholic Charities and see if they would qualify.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Stewart?
Okay. That was one of my questions. So
great minds.
So thank you. Wow, I was just going to say, I think this is such a great thing because I've read studies and things that say that if the county or whatever government entity could supply sometimes as little as $500 or $200 a month, it would keep people from losing their apartments. It would keep people from being homeless. And so I think this is the sort of thing that we really need to be doing more of. So I think it's great. So thank you.
Yep, Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I agree. This is crucial. We need more of it. I have many constituents who are wondering how to make that gap payment on rent. And how is this promoted, either by the administration or the contractor, Catholic Charities?
We're basically promoting it through the Ulster County Continuum of Care, which is a series of providers who engage the community in connection with their housing needs. We're also going to promote this on the county website. Catholic Charities is promoting it. So there's outreach being done in a manner that was consistent with the Emergency Solutions Grant funding that came in via COVID over the past couple of years. So it's generally a group of service providers who you would be familiar with. Although it's being administered by Catholic Charities, RUPCO is promoting it. Legal Services of Hudson Valley is promoting it because they engage a lot of individuals in terms of providing eviction services. Family Woodstock is promoting it. People USA is promoting it. RCAL is promoting it. Again,
Social Services is promoting it between TA, Adult Services, and Children and Family Services.
Yeah.
Anybody we reach out to that might need it.
The one thing I can think of that you might add to that, unless you're already doing it and didn't say it, is each town either has through the town clerk, or sometimes they have a caseworker kind of. I'm trying to remember what Shandaken called the person, but we had a designated.
Used to be a town welfare officer.
Welfare officer.
They changed the characterization and semantics around that, and that was back in the days that some of you might remember when SafetyNet actually paid for by the town, and that's one of the primary responsibilities of the TWO. They used to call them.
Yep. So if that's not already on your list, if you add that to make sure that the town can put that on. Some of the towns have quite extensive outreach to the citizens, and sometimes reach people who don't otherwise get into the system.
That's a wonderful suggestion, and I think the timing is good because we do outreach to the municipalities for PEAT program next month, so we can add a flyer to that outreach.
That'd be great.
Yep, Legislative Stewart.
And has the county done any cost analysis studies how perhaps spending more money on programs like this could save us money in the long run, as opposed to waiting until someone's in the system and then having to shuffle them between hotels and whatever?
I'm not sure. I'm not aware of any. That may have been something that the planning department has done, but
I think what's interesting too is that, you know, as we continue to emerge out of the pandemic era, a lot of the ARPA and Emergency Solutions Grant money that became available, EREP, the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, was an enormous program. You know, those programs are drying up. They were essentially emergency programs, and I think part of the struggle that we're going to face is that there's really nothing to replace those programs. You know, particularly the monetary amounts that were administered. I'll provide to the CE's office, which I do on a fairly regular basis, some statistics around EREP, which was the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, and I think it's pretty compelling. You know, but it was at a time when there were major other dynamics and significant impacts, but I think it's clearly something to always be thinking about, but we haven't done anything specific on it.
It would seem to me like such a study would be warranted, because I mean, I would think that there could be huge cost savings if we just provided a couple $100 a month in rental assistance, as opposed to then trying to find housing for these people who are, you know, in this situation.
So it's UBI, universal basic income? Is that what you mean?
Well, not necessarily, but like I said, I'm just thinking that maybe it would be much cheaper for the county in the long run to provide emergency rental assistance versus, you know, emergency housing.
Yeah, I would suggest that bears investigation, and it could be along the lines that seem workable to me would be those at immediate risk of homelessness, kind of backfilling that instead of trying to find a homeless placement, to look to see if for, you know, individual cases, and then see how far back that goes. Maybe it goes back to all the people that are at risk. Maybe it only captures a couple of dozen. But if we started looking at it, and this funding could be one of the ways, although it's not, there's no research study built into it. Maybe there is among the different quality assurance positions that we've put in. Maybe this is an aspect that they could look at. We could look to see where we have a researcher who could just take a look and see.
Well, and then we would save money on, I mean, if these people have children, then we save money on transporting the kids around and, taking people to medical appointments and things. I mean, it just seems like if people can stay in their homes and not be dispersed all around the county every 21 days, I think we would save tons of money.
And since we're rebuilding the system, then we'll have to go to the federal government and get that transportation money that we would have otherwise gotten, but we're not going to get, but get that anyway and use it to fund this program and for all the other programs that are set up to deal with the problem after it happens. We'll have to try to get them to come along with us to deal with the problem and keep it from happening. It was the big shift in medicine from, you know, a treatment approach to a preventive medicine approach. Really great idea, and you know what? It just works so well. So.
Yeah, last quick comment. There is a category which is homelessness prevention.
Uh-huh.
And the fund that the county just arrived at dedicating, you know, perhaps there could be some consideration around carving out a portion of that for homelessness prevention. I know there's a lot of emphasis on creating new affordable housing, but maybe one of the things that we should not be overlooking is the allocation of funding, whether it's in a universal basic income capacity or some other means-tested manner, to be able to use some of that fund to keep people where they are.
Yeah.
And maybe they need help for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, but the cost to the community is probably far greater if they become homeless than if they're able to remain where they are, not to mention just the stability for that individual or that family. So that might be something to ponder in connection with your discussions about what to do with that.
Any other questions?
I'm not sure DSS would be involved in that. That fits one person's suggestion.
Just to kind of respond, I know that conversation has come up from time to time, and we've discussed it with a county executive. Her question is always like, that's a huge kind of undertaking. How do we even go about beginning to figure out who would be qualified? How much would we give them? How long would we give it to them? How would we determine? And that's a big research and policy question that's a big responsibility for the county to take on. So I think any ideas about how to research that, resource it, the implications of taking that on would be very, very helpful to us. I think one of you threw out the quality assurance analyst, you know, just kind of those administration questions. That's always really kind of.
Thank you. I mean, this is something that I've been talking about my whole yet brief time here, and I think the answers could be the state has done it, so we can copy what they've done. The state is evidently helping fund this effort, so, like, more of this, please.
I mean, and we can do this with the state. This is $500,000 with the state giving us now, administer that program, and see where we can go off of that.
Any other
questions? Yeah, I do, and I'm sorry it's not on the resolution, but do we see more money coming in given that we have more immigrants coming into the area? I thought I had read that the governor is putting more money into housing. No?
Specifically for the current migrant
Nothing
crisis? No.
On
the
radar? Okay.
No. I mean, sorry, they do have a program to relocate a small number of families who are eligible for permanent relocation through the Office of Refugee Resettlement and the Office of Americans, but that's a different, like, very
completely
small
okay.
program that they're trying to find permanent housing for migrants.
All right, if there's no further questions, I'll call the question on Resolution 497.
Aye.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? 497 is approved unanimously. Resolution 500, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $70,000 engineered by the county with Family of Woodstock, Inc., Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Move it.
Moved by Nolan. Seconded by Petit. This is to increase the not-to-exceed amount for emergency services to homeless individuals during inclement weather as part of the Code Blue plan. Is there anything further to add beyond that description?
I'll be super quick.
Yep.
This is just an additional amount of invoices that we received from Family of Woodstock. This was for clients during Code Blue activations that could not be accommodated at the warming center. This could have been individuals that were not able to comply with the conduct or families. And our other Code Blue service provider is Family of Woodstock, so they make arrangements and placements for those families. And when we got their final invoices for the 22-23 season, we needed to do this increase. And this is 100% reimbursable through the Code Blue allocation that we got for last week.
Any questions from the committee? Legislator Erner?
Yeah, I totally support this project is obviously life-saving, and I want the funds to go through, but I'm going to be a protest no. And the reason is, I've stated before, so I'll just summarize, the centering of police agencies as those who the family will work with as that's the one basically community agency that is named in here, and then it goes on to say, like, work with other community resources. I fully recognize the police will often have the first encounter with a person in need of this life savings. These life-saving measures, and I wish it weren't the case, because I don't think that's really the police's role. So that's why I'm a protester.
Can I just respond to the reason for that programmatically? It's part of the Code Blue regulations, and the reason that law enforcement agencies are required to participate during Code Blue activations is because they have personnel in the field. So all municipal, county, and state police agencies are required during their shifts to look for people who may be outdoors during periods of cold weather and engage them around asking if they need help. So that's why the engagement happens with law enforcement. We generally don't have the ability to deploy staff during periods of severe weather who can safely go around and know where there might be people. You take a police department like the Shandaken Police Department, they know their community. They might know where there might be somebody living outdoors, living in an abandoned building, living in a car, living under a bridge. So law enforcement is a vital part of the programming, and they're regulatorily required to be participating in making first contact. I know that it's not necessarily the best possible option, but that's the reasoning behind it. So that's why law enforcement is a vital partner that's required to participate. They also provide transportation from all points in the county to the warming center. So frequently I will contact the Ulster County Sheriff's Department and say, I received a telephone call about a person who's in Walkhill, who's in Saugerties. Can you please pick that person up and transport them to the warming center? So that's why law enforcement is involved. I just wanted the committee to understand the reason behind that. Thank you.
Yep, Legislator Nolan.
I fully support that and certainly see that from my district, the westernmost towns, that sometimes it's only police that will be traveling on roads where people might be encountered. But would it address Legislator Erner's concern to specify further or develop, if it's not in place, that the police can invoke mobile mental health or others who might make a contact? Or would that actually be illegal under the way that...
No, they frequently do, and they're actually authorized. They also have the jurisdiction to be able to do an involuntary admission of an individual that they encounter in the psychiatric emergency room. And that often has to happen as well, because the choice they're facing is to leave somebody out in freezing cold weather who might be harmed or worse, or to take that person against their will into a psychiatric emergency admission. But they do, under the mental hygiene law, have the authority to do that. So that's also one of the reasons why they're charged with this responsibility. If we deployed our staff to go out and engage people in cold weather, we wouldn't be able to have any ability to dictate to them that they had to accept our help. So, and mobile mental health is a very small group, albeit clearly prepared to respond to any referrals they receive. But again, in a severe weather emergency, they're not going to be able to deploy and cover this county.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and I mean, I can attest to that. We had we had seniors that we had our local sheriff was checking on during the ice storm, you know, where they had gone a couple of days without heat. So it was nobody else was really should have been out on that road.
Any further questions? If not, I will call the question on resolution number 500. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
One opposed? The other opposed?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you. Resolution number 501, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $67,899 entered into by the county with the family of Woodstock through the Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Second.
All right, moved by Nolan, second by Stewart. And Commissioner Iapussi, if you want to give us a very brief
overview?
Sure. I'm going to ask our Director of Coordinated Children's Services, Jen Stevenson, who's joining us tonight, to talk about this program.
Thanks for having me. It's my first committee.
Welcome.
She's coming back to taking my notes.
Yeah. Taking little notes and learning things. So this program is actually, it's called DASH, which stands for Developing Adolescent Social Harmonies. It's part of, it's funded 100%, which is great, by New York State. It's part of the Raise the Age law and programming around that. So prior to 2018, 16 and 17-year-olds were sent to jail when they engaged in an act that would constitute a crime. Now there's programming has been really bolstered by the state to help kids avoid that, and it's actually against the law now to put them in jail. So in any case, this program is fabulous. They serve about 30 youth a year. It's run by family. It serves kids that are at high risk of getting a charge in the community. They can be 15, 16, or 17 years old. And the case manager will go out when with the kids that they work with, and they take them, they work on independent living skills, they help them get job applications, they go to the youth house and help out with if there's kind of conflict issues in the home, they'll help problem solve around that. So it's a really good program. It's had a lot of success. The outcomes have been great. So I don't know if you have any specific questions. I do have a couple pamphlets I'll throw on the table if anyone wants to share them with your
Is this do you work hand in hand with the Raise the Age through probation, or is this something totally separate?
Well, probation and OCS, like OCFS and probation work hand in hand. So probation is once the kids have gotten into trouble, they may be involved. The bulk of the kids that we're serving are actually prevention. So kids that really haven't gotten in trouble yet, but maybe they're leaving home without permission, they're running with the wrong crowd, their parents are really, really worried about them. So it provides some added support for kids like that.
And they don't necessarily have to have an open services case with DSS.
Right.
The referrals go, can go directly to family, let's talk through their family, through the school, guidance counselor, anything like that. And it may be just this service that child will need.
Okay. Any other questions, comments, or concerns? All right. I will call the question on Resolution 501. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? 501 is unanimous. Resolution 502, approving the execution of a contract for $200,000 entered into by the county with J&D Ultra Care Corp, Department of Social Services. I have a motion to discuss.
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan. Second by Pete. Commissioner Iposi, if you want to give us
some. I'm going to jump in. This is a preschool. So we have two preschool students that require one-to-one nurses this school year. And we are required to have nursing on the bus with both these children. Mm-hmm. So this is an estimated amount based on the current market rate for a RN, and that these children, we're estimating that we will need this nurse at least 4 hours. Minimum is for the one child is 2 hours, because we have to pick the nurse up and round trip them, so they get paid for those hours. The schools that they're going to have will have a nurse on site, so we don't have to pay for that. The other, Brookside will be contracting with the same agency for the nurse to stay through the day, and Brookside will pay for the nurse from 9 to 2. I pay prior to 9 o'clock, and I pay after 2 o'clock for it. And it's based on calculating 180 days of school plus 30 days in the summer, because most likely they will be approved for summer program.
Any questions, comments, or concerns? If there are none, I'll call the question on Resolution Number 502. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 502 is unanimous. Resolution 503, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $455,315 entered into by the county with Liberty Resources, Inc. and the Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion discussed?
So moved. Second.
Yep, moved by Stewart, second by Nolan. Commissioner Iposi, or
thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. expensive, but I'll just say that, again, this is another program that's funded 100% through the state for part of the programming. Two-thirds of, we have three therapists and a supervisor. It's called Multisystemic Therapy. It's an intensive 5-month program for very high-risk kids, families that are very overwhelmed, and you have pretty much a coach with you in the home 3-4 times a week if necessary. They're working to help parents gain better control over their kids' behavior. So two-thirds of the program is for our Raise the Age kids, 15 and up. And then we added just this year a another therapist who works with our what we call STSJP kids, which stands for Supervision and Treatment Services for Juveniles program. It's something that OCFS has all the counties participate in, coming up with programming for kids that are involved with probation. So a third of the caseload is working with kids 12 and up who are involved with probation or have a PIMS diversion. So really the cost is just a local share of $38,750, so a little less than what it looks like.
Okay. Well, better known.
I'm just wondering, Commissioner McDonald, if, and the two of you, are these programs, this program and the program that we put in place with ARPA to do more extensive outreach to families that might be in trouble, are those completely separate, or is there any overlap? Or how do you interact with each other?
They're separate. The LaSalle program, is that what you're at?
That's
the Health and Schools program. That program is really earmarked to be able to identify kids that would normally not come to our system, right? So they don't have a diagnosis, they haven't been to the hospital, but they're having trouble in school, as they're not necessarily behavioral trouble, but the teacher can see that there is something that's keeping them from being able to accept the education and engage in that. And so those kids wouldn't have been through probation yet. We're trying to keep them from getting probation.
No, yeah.
Thank you.
And I would just say, to answer your question, you know, we can get referrals really from parents, from probation. Like, I think one of our biggest needs right now, and why we added on to this particular contract, is because we have a lot of kids that are very anxious and not going to school, and parents who don't know what to do about it. It's really difficult. So those kids end up on what we call PIMS diversions, because the schools are, you know, they are supposed to be in school, it's part of the law. And so this program can really help those parents. So we wanted to, you know, kind of target some of those younger kids. Middle school is a real tough time when we're seeing the school avoiders. So.
Any other questions, comments, or concerns from the committee? All right, then I'll call the question on resolution number 503. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 503 is adopted unanimously. Resolution number 509, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $150,000 entered into by the county with Rondout Legal Services, Inc. through the Department of Social Services.
Moved
by Nolan. Second by Corcoran. And Commissioner Iposi, if you want to give us a very brief overview.
Super brief. This is the company that does process serving for all of our legal proceedings that we participate in. Primarily, those are generated out of our legal unit in connection with family court proceedings. We also occasionally find ourselves in Supreme Court for mental hygiene law guardianship proceedings, as well as surrogates court for filing claims against the state. And we have an enormous volume of service that we do in connection with our support collection unit. So that is the services that Rondout Legal provides.
Thank you. Any questions, comments, or concerns from the committee? If there are none, I will call the question on resolution 509. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? 509 is approved unanimously. Resolution 511, approving the execution of a contract for $90,000 entered into by the county with Youth Advocate Programs, Inc. through the Department of Social Services. May I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Moved by Nolan.
Second.
Second by Petit. And Commissioner Iposi, do you want to give us a brief overview?
Sure, I'll defer to Jen again, but I'll make one quick comment, which is that one of the real benefits we've realized with our STSJP programming has been that a couple of years back when the state implemented Raise the Age, which required that 16 and 17 year olds no longer be incarcerated in the adult population, resulted in allocations of significant amounts of money because the state wanted to be prepared for the fact that those 16 and 17 year olds would have to go into secure detention facilities. One of the great benefits we have because of our coordinated children's services unit is we have a very low rate of children going into secure detention, and our SDSGP plans that we submit have allowed us to use a lot of the Raise the Age funding for this programming. You might not have wanted to say that, but I want to give CCS credit for that. And it's really revolutionary in terms of keeping kids out of secure detention in residential treatment facilities and preventing their removals, ultimately. So this is programming, this one and the next revolution.
It's a little hard for me to tell which is which, and I don't want to suggest it be blocked, but they're both, 511 and 512 are both part of kind of an SDSJP, our SDSJP plan. So I'll just talk about the first one as if it may be related to Raise the Age.
That's the one that is.
It is. Okay, good. Okay. So the Youth Advocate program pairs youth with a mentor who takes them out, keeps them really doing pro-social activities, out of trouble in the community, giving them extra supervision that they need. And again, this is to help prevent kids from getting into trouble with the law. It's really a successful program, great outcomes. The other great thing that YAP does that I'm very appreciative of is that they help these youth find a job, and they actually will pay the youth out of the YAP funds for working, and then oftentimes the employers will like that youth so much that they'll hire them. You know, so it really gets them connected, and you know, again, it's designed to keep kids out of trouble. Any questions?
Any questions from the committee? All right, if there's no questions, then we will vote on 511. All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 511 is approved unanimously. Resolution 512, approving the execution of a contract for $90,000 entered into by the county with Youth Advocate Programs, Inc., the Department of Social Services. May I have a move by Nolan and a second by Corcoran? Excellent. Deputy Commissioner Beisel, do you want to speak further on?
We'll have Jim take this one again. This is an SDSJP resolution, I believe.
Oh, sorry, my list is wrong. I said the wrong person's name.
It's okay.
Yeah, sorry.
So, kind of, this part of the program is a separate contract, but it serves youth from ages 12 up to 17. It's part of SDSJP programming, and that younger population does have a local share, which is actually $34,200. So the state pays 62%, and then the Department of Social Services pays the other 38%. Again, designed to help kids who are getting into trouble, you know, get out in the community doing really positive things, and we're finding that it's really helping a lot of overwhelmed families who are very concerned about their kids who might be headed in the wrong direction.
And this one allows it for us to reach the younger population, which is important.
Yeah.
Any questions, comments, concerns from the committee? All right, I will call the question on Resolution 512. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, Resolution 512 is approved unanimously. Resolution 513, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget to accept additional funding from the New York State Office of Mental Health for the Department of Mental Health.
I'll very happily move it.
Great, moved by Nolan, second by Corcoran. Commissioner McDonald, if you want to give us a very, very brief overview.
Yeah. 2023 New York State enacted budget has a 4% COLA in it. The state of New York is the Office of Mental Health for the state of New York is giving additional state aid for our program.
Great. Any questions, comments, or concerns? Let Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I agree with the yeas I was hearing. I will note that this 4% increase is happening at the same time as a lot of contracts we're looking at, for example, for the busing, are going up 10, 15, 18%, and that's something we have to reckon with, and I'm also eager to see how our budget and policy will deal with the living wage in Ulster County, equaling the state minimum wage as of January 1st.
Any further questions, comments, or concerns? All right. Hearing none, I will call the question on 513. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? 513 is approved unanimously. Resolution 514, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget to accept extension of allocation of federal community mental health services block grant funding for expansion of our system of care implementation through the Department of Mental Health.
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan, second by Corcoran. And Commissioner McDonald, if you want to give us a brief overview.
Sure. In 2022, the department applied for the block grant through the Office of Mental Health that were federal dollars. And that was specifically to be able to enhance our children's system of care work, which we've been doing for decades. But because the funds were available, we decided to take it to see if there was a way that we can get even more community support around this work. We received those dollars for 2022, we did events, we did planning, lots of community coordination, and then at the end of 2022, there was no indication that the monies would continue. At the beginning of 2023, we got notice in January that monies will continue, you don't have to do anything, you don't have to put in another application, but the monies didn't come until now. So now we're in a place where we're needing to scramble to be able to spend some of these dollars. We're going to be doing the same thing. We're going to have a great event, Mind, Body, and Soul, at the YMCA in November, all-day event for children and family, and we've been spending a good amount of the last few months planning that event. So that's where these dollars will go.
Wonderful. And we'll get lots of information we can share about that event.
Absolutely.
When it's coming up. Awesome. Legislator Petit.
Thank you. So I don't think I've ever been aware. Do you table at different events? You do.
We have, yes.
Okay.
And our children's solo coordinator, who's been trying to co-lead this, has been to Antior, she's been to Rondout, she's tabled at the student nights. We're getting students to be able to be a part of this community as well. Part of our dollars have been spent in incentives and getting the kids to be able to come and tell us what we're doing wrong, and they do.
Cool, thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments, or concerns on 514? I'll call the question on 514. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 514 is approved unanimously. We have a block here that we could make. This one, I will say there is at least one contract. I think we're going to have one no on. These are all mental health pass-through funding amounts with various vendors for crisis intervention, care coordination, respite services, peer support, supported housing, vocational rehabilitation services for psychiatrically labeled. And I just want to, before we block them, just mention one of the resolutions that could potentially be in the block is, I believe, 5-21.
Yes,
522. Yes, that's what I meant.
Would it be a yes on the block if that helps?
Yeah, you could be a yes on the block, and I believe you can be a yes on the block, and we can have that one no recorded for that one resolution. Is
so
that
the
correct?
Block would be for the resolution.
So the block is going to be, I'll feed them to you. I would entertain a motion to block resolutions 515, 516, 517, 519, 520, 521, and 522.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All right, moved by Nolan, second by Corcoran. Any discussion on the act of blocking them? Legislator Erner?
So that I will also have a resolution I'm almost certain to be no on. That can work within this blocking.
Yep, we can have individual no's recorded even though we're going to discuss them as a block and vote on them as a block.
Great.
Any further discussion on the... Right, Deputy Clerk? I believe that is...
Yes, I think I don't think you have to have an identical vote on every resolution in a block.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
okay.
My understanding.
That's what you're saying.
Well. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. So any further discussion on the act of blocking them? on the block. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so those resolutions are now being considered as, or are now a block. Can I have a motion to consider them as a motion to consider the block of resolutions?
So moved.
All right, moved by Legislator Nolan, second by Legislator Stewart. Let's see, these are mental health. So Commissioner McDonald, if you want to give us a brief overview.
Sure, so these are all state pass-through dollars. The majority of them are the distribution of the COLA dollars that we spoke about a little bit earlier. And so that causes for us to amend the majority of the contract. But 521 is people's annual update for their contract for their remaining dollars, which includes their consumer advocate at the psych emergency ED at Health Alliance, peer advocate, and a and supported housing 16 slots. So.
Thank you. Any questions, comments, or concerns from the committee? I believe Legislator Petit, you're going to be a no on 522.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
And then Legislator Erner, is there a no vote you would like recorded for one of these?
Yeah, it's for 515, and I have a question and
okay.
a comment.
Go for it.
Thank you. Last I had heard, Access Supports for Living was not adequately staffing our emergency services, for example. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to be there most days of the month, and they were there like two or three, according to Director Erickson. And I know, Commissioner McDonald, you had told us that you were working with that. What is the status of their staffing issue and their ability to fulfill what we've asked them to do in this contract at this point?
So unfortunately, they were not able to fulfill it. We are going to remove the 911 clinician from their contract, and the diversion is being handled by the Dutchess County Health Line, which is our call center for our 988, our regional call center for 988. So Access will have that money decreased from their contract.
Yeah, Legislator Erner. Is it continuing on this topic, or is it a new topic? Because I would like to. Yeah, is it
go ahead.
On this topic?
I can defer to the next legislator. And
okay, because if it's about this specific comment, then I would like to give you the opportunity.
Yeah, I would just say that I think that voting to withhold funding from an agency that's having staffing difficulties may not be the best way to assist the program in addressing those staffing difficulties. So I understand that to register a disapproval of the inadequacy, but I really appreciate Commissioner McDonald's problem solving to make what was not working work through a different mechanism. And then, you know, certainly we need to make sure that there's a reasonable use of the funding we're providing, but there's more than enough need that Access Support for Living is providing that I can see. So just to, you know, put in context that using a vote to register protest is something that I think can bear some thought in many instances.
Legislator Erner.
Okay, thank you. And I appreciate Legislator Nolan reiterating what turned out to be a reminder from Commissioner McDonald. I know that now you're saying that, I remember that you had explained that in a previous committee, so I apologize for asking you to repeat yourself. But I have another issue with Access, and that's the real the other reason for my protest now. And the issue is what happened in Wawarsing with the shooting death of Daniel McAlpin, and their involvement there, as far as I know, has not been investigated. I know that the police involvement was by the state attorney general, but I would like to see our mental health department or state mental health get involved and figure out when there's an agency that's responsible for mobile mental health and there's a death, what's going on there? So I don't know if there's really a question in there, but it's really an ask of our administration and perhaps the state. But that's why I'll be a no on this.
Sure. Commissioner McDonald, would you like to respond to that? You certainly don't have to, but would you like to?
What I can say is that any inquiry that we've had in terms of what happened that day has been told to us that there's an investigation that is active and hasn't concluded, and that precedes any questions that and any answers that we're going to receive until it's concluded.
the Attorney General investigation?
Yes.
Any further questions, comments, or concerns? Legislator Erner, you'd still like to be recorded as a no vote for 5-15?
I would. Thank you.
All right, so I will call the question on the block with the understanding that there will be at least one no vote on 5-15, Legislator Erner, and at least one no vote on 5-22, Legislator Petit. On the resolutions, considering those two, or with those two factored in, on the resolutions on the block.
The rest of them are good.
So we are eyes on. Six eyes on 5-16, 5-17, 5-19, 5-20, and 5-21. We are 5-1 with one no, Legislator Erner. 5-15. We are 5 yeses and one no, Legislator Petit on 5-22. Does that all make sense?
That correctly records my vote.
Mm-hmm. Well,
are you satisfied?
I'm fine.
Good. I am pleased.
And I can read those if you'd like in the future.
No, I enjoy it.
Okay.
All right. Resolution 423, establishing a policy to reform social services, temporary assistance, housing. May I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
And may I have a second?
Second.
All right, so it was moved by Corker, second by Petit, and Legislator Erner, do you want to speak to this?
Sure. I would like to. Yes, thank you. So on the administration, I continue to discuss this, and I think my goal would be to bring it back in somewhat of a different form next month. But I'll ask the committee either to postpone it again or to take no action as we did 2 months ago. As one legislator, I'm continuing to receive calls almost every day from folks about temporary assistance housing at social services. And on one hand, I'm trying to reassure the public that DSS is there to help despite whatever experience they may have, and I also am hearing from many members of the public that they've totally given up on it. And so that was and continues to be my motivation for what I anticipate might eventually look more like a policy of, these are some minimum standards of what the people of Ulster County could expect from temporary assistance emergency housing. And rather than prescribe too much about operations or build this thing or adjust that thing, which, by the way, I appreciate that the administration has been listening to me and the public around several of these things that we've discussed both publicly and in separate meetings. So I guess that's my update around that.
Well, I'm comfortable if the will of the committee is to take no action. We can move on to the next resolution unless there's any further comments or questions or concerns.
That was going to be my suggestion, with the anticipation of perhaps some changes that might be even a different resolution. I think just taking no action makes the most sense.
So we'll move on to resolution 425, establishing a policy to liberalize access to public spaces for survival. Can I have a motion to discuss? Moved by Corcoran, seconded by Petit, and Legislator Erner, I will defer to you as the sponsor of the legislation.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have, I guess the one line thing about this is similarly, I think it's going to, well, let me back up for a moment. We have a member of the public here who has been circulating petition in support of this, which I did not ask them to do, and I appreciate that they have done so. I also understand the administration's and the committee's concerns about the policy the way that it is, and I'm continuing compiling that feedback in a way that I hope will produce something that folks can go along with. I did speak with the Commissioner of Public Works today, for example, about the fairgrounds as an option, like it was used during the pandemic for the worst part of the pandemic when vaccines first became available to vaccinate the public. And I understand that because we contract with the Agricultural Society, we will have to talk with them about the way they use it, but he suggested that maybe some space could be made available on the horse show side, of like where there's parking during the fair. But that was just like an off-the-cuff suggestion, I understand, from Commissioner Masterson. So I had that conversation. Director Copenhaver has left, but she mentioned that the Office for the Aging Bus actually is not going out much, if at all, lately. And so when Chair Uchtel and I had our last low-income affordable housing discussion, I don't remember if Director Copenhaver mentioned this to the whole group, but she and I followed up. Basically, this bus has plumbing in it. And Village of New Paltz Trustee Weisbird had said, hey, could we put some showers in a mobile vehicle? And it turns out the county has a mobile vehicle with plumbing in it. It's sitting normally at development court. So that might be something that we could use to address that aspect of what 425 contemplates. Commissioner Masterson also mentioned maybe there's some space at Sojourner Truth Park, in not the one in Kingston, the one in Saugerties. I haven't looked further into that. That just came up today. But I guess the point being that I'm continuing to investigate some specific possibilities, and would be happy for the committee either not to act or postpone this once again.
Legislator Miller.
Yes, I think taking no action again might be the right course. We still are expecting a space study, and I think that will be helpful to have in our hands before we make re-engage some of the discussions you're suggesting. The idea of equipping the van that has plumbing for showers, I think, is really worth pursuing separately. It doesn't require a policy to do that. And I know that Samadhi has long wanted to have a vehicle that would be able to provide street access for showers. So maybe there's some, it'd probably be a separate discussion, but whether Samadhi or family could be charged under one of their existing contracts or some future contract to make those further renovations, and then have that be available to people throughout the county on a regular basis. I think even whatever we do with housing, there are some people who, if you can give them a shower once a week, will take care of the rest of their needs in ways that we might not anticipate. Mm-hmm. And would be better off, and everybody'd be better off for that. So I think there are some things that I would like to go back and look at, including tiny houses. I think we need to look at, if we're congregating small units, whether they're houses or crates or tents, what we are able to provide in terms of services in that setting, and how that gets us a better situation than some of the situations already being complained of by some of our legislators and some of the clients we're serving. So I don't want to recreate the worst of the system, but if there's something in that that can add to and improve the system, I think we should be pursuing it. Happy to revisit it, and I would prefer to revisit it in the context of how do we use resources to accomplish this, maybe some guidelines or working groups again. To me, a policy is what we bring in if we don't have a shared vision already. It's a long statement for a suggestion that we take no action.
Legislator Erner?
I just wanted to respond to one thing that Legislator Nolan said, which is that Commissioner Masterson and I did discuss the space study, which we're all both frustrated is taking so long, but he He believes that it might be close. It might even be presented to the Public Works Committee next Friday, he's hoping. Or like the progress on it anyway. Yeah.
Cool. So if there's no further comments, then we can move on without taking action from 425. And it looks like there are no further comments. Resolution 126. I am withdrawing because we approved our housing funds.
Yay.
I'm very excited about that. Resolution 127, I'm not asking for an action on, as we continue to work with, really, on the DSS, the same DSS stuff, really. And then we have, those are all of our resolutions. We don't have any new business. And then in forthcoming resolutions is a resolution sponsored by Legislator Hansett that she will be joining us for the October session to share more information about. But there is a mention of it in your packet, so I wanted to mention that.
And memorializing resolution?
I honestly am not super familiar with it, and Legislator Hansett will, it's not, I don't believe it's a memorializing resolution, but I'm not versed in it. I don't feel comfortable speaking on her behalf. So she'll be here. And we were never, it wasn't ready to be adopted or to be considered this month anyway. So that's why it's in forthcoming resolution, is my understanding. So,
motion to adjourn?
We have a motion to adjourn on the table.
Second.
And we have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?